Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
Going on, happy new year, everybody. We are live with the legend himself, the man himself, fighting February 5th. I grew up watching this guy, the baddest motherfucker on the planet, Chris Liebman. What's going on, brother?
What's up, man? Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man. How's training going?
It's going, dude. It's going. I'm in fight camp, you know? I'm a month out, and I'm feeling it right now. So, shit sucks, but I guess that's right where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, man. And going against a tough opponent, you know, this is going to be – how many times have you fought in BKFC? You've been there for quite a bit, right?
Well, this will be my fourth bare-knuckle fight, but only two of the – so I had one for the garbage organization that didn't pay me. And then I've had two for BKFC, and that's been great.
Right. I heard about that. You fought for one promotion, and it was like a big controversy in the MMA community. Like, you fought for this promotion, and they ended up – did they, like, not pay you half, or, like, they skipped you? Did you completely grab the entire thing?
You there?
Yeah, man.
There we go. Okay, I got you. I was getting the type echo from top guy.
Me.
Try now.
You there?
I think so. Technical difficulties. Can you hear me?
That too?
Matt, do you?
I cannot understand. Yeah.
Let me kick you out, and we'll pull you back. Pull you back in.
Dave. You, I can hear perfect.
All right.
Is it me that ruined everything? That sounds about right.
You're good.
Okay, I'm good.
You're good.
All right, and usually,
yeah, usually it's Gabe that has all the issues.
I'm the one that messes everything up, so I'm actually impressed that I'm the one that's on point.
Yeah, it sounded like David was kind of asking about the promotion that you had some issues with. He was saying there was a big controversy in the MMA community about that. You want to go into that a little bit, or?
Yeah, so that was the Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation. I think that's the one that Boss Rootin was kind of the face for. You know, the owner / investor, you know, used all this money that he stole from illegal real estate deals to fund the show. You know, showed Boss that the money was in his account and everything else. And then about 3 days before the show happened, the feds, you know, froze his bank account, you know. And they went ahead and had that show and made that show happen. And then they brought us in to give us checks, and they're like, hey, here's you want direct deposit or you want a check? And I'm like, yeah, I want a fucking check, you know. And he's like, okay, but here's the thing. Don't cash it when you get home, you know? And so this went on for, you know, the next week. Hey, don't cash it this week. Cash it next week. Cash it next week. Next thing you know, I've had this fight. It's 2 months later. I'm like, hey, man, what the fuck is going on? You know, come to find out as things progressed, ultimately the guy Tom ends up in prison on, you know, real estate embezzlement charges, you know. So I got a lawsuit going. I still do. It's been a fucking nightmare. I've been to court like 4 times, and every time they postpone it because of something else. And then the COVID hit, you know, and it's more. And the guy don't have any fucking money anyways, because all right. the money he had was stolen. So I'm wasting all this time and energy just trying to sue the fucker on principle, you know. Honestly, I'm probably just going to give up on it, man. I hate to say it, but, you know, I've got another hearing on the 22nd of this month. It's a video court hearing. You know, we got robbed, you know. I'm not the only one. Everybody on that card.
It sounds like MMA and bare knuckle boxing have some of the most unscrupulous promoters, period. I've dealt with a lot of that nonsense in MMA.
Yeah. I mean, you know, luckily, you know, I've been around long enough to where I was like, hey, look, man. You're a brand new promotion. You're going to have to give me some money up front. Yeah. So I got some of my, I mean, they were off. It was crazy the amount of money they were trying to offer some of these guys too. So I should have known it was fishy, but you know, I called boss vouched for the guys. The money was legit. They were going to pay me. I made some calls and everything else and decided, okay, I'll go ahead and stick with these guys. And you know what? I should have trusted my first instinct. That's my fault. You know, if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. But, you know, at least I got some money. Though, you know, like I said, I don't think most of the other people did. Probably none of them.
Yeah. I had a fight, an MMA fight where everyone got stiffed, but I told the promoter in advance because I'd heard from his previous promoter promotion that I asked for a certified check, and I was the only one who got paid at the whole event. Yeah. Oh yeah, good times.
Yeah. I remember years and years ago I fought on a show for a guy named Paul Herrera. It was
I know Paul.
Yeah, Paul now, it was Hitman the movie part yep. two. And that was back when MMA was still illegal in California.
Yep. So
they got away with it by saying it was a fucking
wrestling
movie. And even if you got slept, they might raise your hand if you were already the predetermined winner. Well, in the end of this, one, for years it wasn't on my record. And then they fucking... The you know, at the end of my fight, I fought this guy. God, I gotta remember his name. But he was the jiu-jitsu teacher at Tiki's gym right there in Orange County. You know, the referee looks over at me and goes, "Don't worry, buddy, you won that fight." They raise his hand. It's not on my record for years and years, the fight. Then it pops up on my record. And also the funny thing is they fucking tried to pay me like I lost the fight. You know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy. Turns out I found out, I think I even heard he was betting some people on the fights. You know, like, crazy.
Yeah, good times.
But I like Paul. He's a good guy. This is a long time ago. I'm talking about maybe 17 years ago.
Yeah. Holy shit.
I fought this kid. I think Kale fought Babalu on that same card.
Yeah, I fought a fight in Hollywood at a nightclub where they told us, if we get raided, tell them it's pro wrestling and that it's predetermined and that there's no MMA involved. And I'm like, we're going to get raided? They're like, yeah, we might go to jail. If we do, don't worry, we'll bail you out. All right.
That's the whole school right there, bro.
Yeah. Let's go do it. Yeah.
Where was that at?
It was at a nightclub in Hollywood. I'll never forget. It was actually – I think all those guys, Paul Herrera, Bobby Gamboa, Quentin Jackson, all those guys, they were all involved in like.
I feel like I remember this show. I think they also used like, instead of ring girls, they used like the fucking Vivid girls. they porn stars for the ring card. I know they did for, well, this is a funny story. That at that same Hitman show, they used porn stars for the ring card girls.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys remember Erin Brink.
Erin Brink. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Erin.
Oh, Brink, yeah. Come on.
Fighting on the card. So I'm backstage warming up with my coach, Robert Fallis. Well, this was back when Erin Brink was big in those movies, you know? And he's sitting there with his girlfriend. She pulls a fucking weed pipe out of her vagina.
Woo-hoo!
And I mean, she was only wearing a thong, you know, and starts to light up back in the locker room, right? And my coach looks at her and he goes, "What the fuck are you doing? I got fighters back here, you know?" And Aaron's like, and I love Erin. Erin's great. You know, he's been sober for years. He's a good guy down here. You know, he looks at my coach and he goes, "Don't talk to her like that. She's a lady." And I was just like, that was my first experience with Erin Brink. Yeah.
He had an academy. Erin had an academy for a while. It was called the Erin Brink Face Punching Academy. It lasted about 2 months.
Love the name, bro.
Yeah, the exceptional name. I was like, that is the best name of any gym I've ever heard of. The Erin Brink Face Punching Academy.
Yeah, man. Wait, well, back in the day, bro, if that guy caught you clean, you were, you know, he knocked a lot of dudes out, man.
He's a big puncher. Was a big puncher.
That first round.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well,
this was back in 2000. I don't mean to interject, but this was back in 2004, like right in between, like that. Those were some crazy years for you because you were on a fucking tear. Like you won the championship in Gladiator Challenge and you won the championship in WBC, and then you got signed on to the Ultimate Fighter. This was around that time frame, right?
That's correct. Yeah. This was right in there with the Gladiator Challenge days. Yeah. Maybe either during my Gladiator Challenge or right before, right then. So I can't even imagine what year that must have been. 2005, 2004, something like that.
Yeah. And it was so crazy how it all played out because you were one of the best in the world. Diego Sanchez was on a fucking tear. Like, I believe, what's his name? Another guy that was on the show. Bobby Southworth. He fought in Pride. So you had all these group of guys together, and I'm going to segue into a big topic, but you know, you had, you know, you were training with Team Quest, right? You were training with Randy Couture and Randy Couture just got back from Japan. What's the Ultimate Fighter before or after Randy Couture cornered Ruan Gardner for Pride that you guys taped the Ultimate Fighter?
I think it was after, actually.
Shit, after? I can't remember, man. I don't know. But it's funny too because sometimes I guess I get hit in the head for a living, but I talk to people all the time. They know fucking more about my fucking record than I do. I'm like, really? Yeah.
David's an encyclopedia. So.
But you are, man. But you're 100% right. You know that first season of the Ultimate Fighter, they really handpicked the guys. Everybody that ended up on that show was already knocking on the UFC's door. And I think that's what, you know, that's one of the things that made that first season so great. And one of the reasons so many guys off that show ultimately progressed to have amazing careers, become Hall of Famers and everything else. I mean, you got Stephen Bonner, you got Forrest Griffin, you got Kenny Florian, Diego Sanchez, me, you know, and a ton of, you know, guys that did really well and had long, great Mike Swick, great careers.
Yeah.
Ken Florian.
Yeah. But you had two great coaches and you had probably one of the most talented group in that, you know, in that time frame. But did you guys know, like, back in that day that the entire company encompasses, like, the entire company was on the line. Like, if the Ultimate Fighter 1 failed, you know, that was the last money that they were going to invest in the UFC was in the Ultimate Fighter. Did you guys know that, like, going into the show, or did you guys just find that out after the show and after it was a success?
Yeah, no, we had no idea. I mean, we knew that the show might not even be on TV. You know what I mean? Like I had no clue, one, what was writing on that show. And obviously none of us knew what the repercussions of that show were going to be and just how successful it was going to be, what it was going to do for the UFC, what it was going to do for me, my career, for everybody else. I mean, it was for that time frame, it was the fucking perfect recipe. You know, they finally got it right. You know, that show allowed people to kind of get to know the athlete so that they wanted to watch you. You know, they had emotion invested in you fighting, whether they loved you or hated you. You know, coming off that show, there was a lot of people that loved me. There was probably more that fucking just really wanted me to see me lose bad, you know? And
I thought we could party together.
That's it, man. And that's, you know, that's the trick to selling tickets, bro, is getting people to fucking care one way or another.
Yeah. Gabe, did you try out for the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah. What's that?
I thought you were involved with the Ultimate Fighter. You have something to do with it, right?
I didn't try out. I was, I basically, yeah, I was on season 5, so long time ago. Yeah, many years ago. I didn't talk about that shit.
So heading into your next,
I'll tell you a funny story about when I tried out for the Ultimate Fighter. The first tryout was, they said, okay, they walk you into this room, you're by yourself, they sit you down in front of this fucking video camera, and they say, we just want you to talk for 5 minutes, right? So, and you got to think about a 23-year-old, 22-year-old Chris Lieb, and I was pretty confident, let's just put it that way, right? And, you know, so they sit me down in front of this car. I don't remember what I said, man, but what ended up happening was, about 3 minutes into my fucking rant over why I should be on the show, the fucking side door swings open and Dana White and Craig Poligian, the producer, come busting in the room, just cracking up, fucking laughing. And they're like, dude, that's it. You're on the fucking show. You're on. Keeping now, they had tryouts planned for like a week for that first season, you know? So that the within 2 minutes they were like, nope, that guy's on the fucking show. And I ended up spending the next fucking couple of days sitting in my fucking hotel room because they had me locked down. I had to put a sign on my door like, could somebody bring me some food? Like, I didn't do any of the other tryouts, man. That was it.
I fucking hate that guy.
He doesn't like to shake hands, man. That's weird to me.
He's a fucking asshole. Fuck. You know, it's funny is I was training at a CrossFit gym and I met his son. And his son goes, oh, yeah, you were on the Ultimate Fighter. My dad was, you know, the producer. And he's like, I'm sorry, man. My dad's an asshole. Like, dude, his own fucking son saying he's an asshole. Yeah. Genuine. You know, like, true.
You know what? I don't want to say fake. Like, I don't know. Like, how do you explain that guy, bro? He's a fucking shitbag. Fair enough. I don't hate him. But yeah, he's an asshole. He's just an asshole. You know?
Yeah. That question. His own son told me, he's like, yeah, my dad's an asshole. I'm sorry. Like, dude, your own son's calling you an asshole. Fuck, come on. If you're an asshole, if your own kid's calling you an asshole, you're an asshole.
You know?
So being a part of the season that helped build the UFC to what it is today and going to BKFC, like a completely new sport, were there any reservations because you had this long, incredible career in the UFC? I mean, you fought the likes of like Wanderlei Silva, you fought Anderson Silva, you fought who's who. Did you have any reservations when you ended that chapter of your career going to BKFC and this pretty much this new entity and going into bare knuckle fighting?
Well, you know, my story, you know, obviously, my UFC career did not end the way that that I wanted it to. You know, I was having a lot of issues, you know, outside of the cage, a lot of substance abuse issues, relationship issues. And ultimately, my last couple fights, you know, I didn't put on nearly the performances that I'm known for. My last fight in the UFC between rounds, I just didn't get off the stool. I was like, fuck it, I don't even want to fight, you know? And that was crippling for me, man. That put me into a huge depression because here's a guy that, you know, everybody, you know, that's the first thing they say, man, you fucking take those shots, dude, and you just keep going, you know? And I fucking quit, man. I quit my last fight in the UFC. And it broke my heart. So, you know, ultimately, you know, I sobered up, you know, I got sober. I changed the people I surround myself with. And I tried to sign with Bellator. And then when my pre-fight medicals found out, they fucking told me I needed a new heart because apparently alcohol and cocaine are not good for your heart. Yeah. So, you know, fast forward like 3 years of being sober and fucking living on the beach, training every day, taking the right vitamins and Chinese herbs for my heart. You know, my cardiologist continued to tell me, hey, you know, wow, this is amazing. Your heart's getting better. You don't need a new heart. Now you only need a pacemaker. We can't believe it. It's a miracle. You don't even need a fucking pacemaker now, Chris, you know? And then finally I said, well, hey, you know, because now I never stopped training for a day. Initially, they didn't even want me to walk up a set of stairs, you know, and I would train my Barrett Yoshida, my jiu-jitsu coach, you know, he'd have me rolling. And when I got too pale, because I get pale white, he'd make me stop and lay down. And then I'd go back to doing rounds, you know, so I didn't take a day off from training. And you know, next thing I know, man, here I am in great shape and I'm kicking the shit out of, you know, all the 20-year-old pros in the gym. And I'm like, fuck, man, I want to, you know, come back. And now Bellator weren't really that interested anymore because a few years had passed, you know, and well, fuck it, man. Bare knuckle, that looks like something pretty cool. I can go out there. At first bare knuckle called me and I was like, nah, I'm not interested. And then I got on YouTube and I looked it up, you know, and I was like, dude, small fucking circle ring, dudes just going toe to toe slugging. This sport was built for me, you know, and I was, you know, and I thought about it and I was like, hell yeah, man, I want to do it, you know? So, you know, that's what I did, you know, and ultimately up until now, you know, I've had three fights, you know, two first round knockouts. My last fight, everything went wrong. They told me I wasn't going to be able to fight, so I didn't cut weight. And they told me to cut weight, so I had to cut it all in a matter of hours. Ended up putting myself into shock to make weight. Then they told me I couldn't fight the day of the fight. Then they drove me across Florida to pass this heart test. I passed the test. Then they drove me straight from there back. I hadn't had any food or water. Then I got in the ring to fight. My legs were fucking cramping and I couldn't sit down in between rounds because my legs were cramping so bad. And I ended up fighting a 5-round war against Dakota Cochran, man, who's a tough motherfucker, dude. And you know what, man, my hat's off to him because I hit him with my best shots and he stayed right in front of me. He hit me with his best shots. You know, at the end of 5 rounds, I had 36 stitches above my eye here. I was cut here. They had to sew my nose back on. I had a broken orbital. You know what? But I stood in there toe-to-toe and slugged it out with that motherfucker all 5 rounds. You know, so now I'm – so that changes the way my martial arts career finishes. You know what I mean? I don't have to tell people, no, I fucking quit on the stool on my last fight. You know, I can tell them, you know, about the rise, the fall, and then the rise again.
The Phoenix.
You know, and hopefully that story goes, you know, to inspire some people because a lot of, you know, fighters, I got a saying, man, fighters are like strippers. They're not paying their way through college, you know? what I mean by that is that there's always some deep, dark secret that you decided you're going to go risk getting your face smashed in, you know, maybe, you know, in front of your friends and family. And if you do well, you might risk getting your face smashed in on national TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's not logical. Most people are not, fuck that, I'm going to college. You know what I mean? But you put all your eggs in one basket to do this, you know? So, you know, I hope that, you know, down the road and as a coach, you know, that story and what I've been through, you know, that, that hopefully, you know, it can, you know, I can help inspire some people, you know, and particularly, you know, fighters, athletes with alcohol or drug abuse problems, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for that. And, you know, I'm continually on my social media, you know, talking to people, reaching out to people, pointing them in the right directions, you know, and doing everything I can, because I know how real that struggle is.
So one more question.
And in a long story short, man, that's why I wanted to fight bare knuckle.
Shit. Chris, I've seen you a refereeing a few times in the amateur circuit down in San Diego. Are you going to keep doing that, the officiating for the state commission, or do you feel like that's something that you're just not going to do anymore?
No, I'm going to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's good. I think the more and more referees that have MMA experience and the judges that we get, because who's going to know fighting better than an actual fighter? You know what I mean? Like with the judges and the referees that I see, I've seen you a few times. Frank Trigg is in there. Yep. I think California is becoming stronger just because we're having these guys with the real experience that are getting in there.
You know, yeah. And every state is different. I think California is really at the forefront for the way that we run our commission, the way that the judging is monitored, the way that everything, I mean, if you go to a show, a pro or an amateur show out here, it runs like in clockwork, you know, and there's nothing crazy ever happens, man. The commission does its job in California. It's really set up well. You know, and I, like you said, I've been working, refereeing and judging for CAMO, which is the amateur commission out here in California for, 3 years, almost 4 years, I guess. But the last year, you know, not too much. The last, I guess, 9 or 10 months since this COVID hit. But ultimately, yeah, that's you know, my progression as a martial artist. You know, this will probably be my last fight. I'm pretty certain it is. You know, I'm gonna, you know, finish up my career with this bare knuckle fight, and then, you know, I want to progress into officiating, you know, coaching, you know, judging, refereeing, you know, and eventually, you know, go pro and work for CSAC, you know, and you know, hopefully one day you'll see me, you know, judging and refereeing the UFC, Bellator, LFA, you know, all those bigger shows. That's the plan.
Good.
Got it. So I got one more question before we let you go. So your opponent, February 5th. Young up-and-comer, Quinn Henry, he says he's going to give you a glorious death. You say you're going to put him in a body bag. You know, what's your opinions on your opponent? What's your strategy going to this fight? What's your feelings on him? And how you think this fight's going to go? Obviously, you think it's going to go in your favor, but how you think the fight's going to play out?
Well, you know what, man? They asked me who I wanted to fight. I watched the tape. I saw the way that kid fights. Dude, he's a slugger. You know what I'm saying? He's lived by the sword, died by the sword. Ultimately, my last fight, I want it to be a memorable one. I want it to be a slugfest, you know, in the way bare knuckle fighting is supposed to be, you know. And he's gonna bring it, man. He's gonna bring it. You know, he's got some fucking heavy hands. He's got some big knockouts. You know, and certainly, you know, I'm training my ass off. So he's gonna try to knock me out. I'm gonna try to knock him out. You know, yeah, there's some strategy involved. You know, I'm watching tape on him going, okay, he does this, I'm going to do that. You know what I mean? Like any fight, but I think he's a tough fight. He's a tough fight for me. And I'm preparing for it that way. I'm training for it that way. I certainly didn't want to have, you know, just an easy nobody for my last fight. You know what I mean? That's not who Chris Lieben is.
Right, right.
That's not the kind of guy I am, you know, and what he said is right, man. I'm going to go out. I'm either going to live by the sword or I'm going to die by the sword, man. That's just, you know, we're come February 5th, dude, me and that dude are going to war, you know, and one of us is going down and I'm doing everything in my fucking power. You know, I'm not a big shit talker. So what I'll say is one of us is going down. I'm doing everything that I fucking possibly can to make sure that it's not me. I'm training my ass off. So you know what? I hope he's doing the same thing, because I'm going to be in shape. I'm going to be ready to go. And you know what? He's got heavy hands, but I think everybody knows that mine aren't light. So we'll see. We'll see who's are heavier.
Fuck yeah, man. And we can't wait to watch your last fight. You know, honor talking to you. It was a pleasure following your entire career. Can't wait to watch your last fight. But where can we follow you? Where can we see your Instagram, Facebook? Where can we find you?
Yeah, man. You know what? Instagram, Twitter. I think it's Chris Lieben MMA. You know, if you just look, I'm the blue check on Instagram, Twitter. And if you guys want to watch the fight on BKFC, the easiest way to do it is there's a link on my Instagram. If you click that link, I think it saves you like a dollar. It's like $4 a month for the BKFC app. And I think I get a quarter. So
I think it's a favor. You I think you're on my fucking
app to sign up to watch my fight, man. It's only like $4 or $5, dude. Well worth the money. Well worth it.
Royalties, brother. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, man. You are an absolute fucking legend.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, man.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Good skill.
Bye. All right, guys. Laughing, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Yes, sir. Gabe, can I tell you something?
It's been too long. I'm getting bad. What's at losing.
Gabe, I have to tell you something. And, guys, I'm going to be completely honest here. I was so nervous talking to him. Like, I'm nervous around the legends, like the people I grew up watching, just like Gabe the first episode. I was so fucking nervous, I forgot Gabe was on The Ultimate Fighter. And I was trying to, like, segue, and, like, I played it off like a joke, like, oh, like, so fucking nervous that I forgot Gabe was on The Ultimate Fighter.
Gabe was a two-time WEC champ.
I know, and
three times. My bad, man. That's,
I mean, my bad. You know, two, three, it doesn't really matter.
Around the legend, man, I always have this fucking problem. It's just like an ongoing issue. Like, first episode with me and Gabe, I was like, fucking holy shit, what am I doing here? Like, same concept with fucking Chris.
Chris Lieben is way more of a legend than I am, man. Like,
we're doing things a little bit different.
You guys all helped build the sport, so I was nervous around all you guys. Shit.
Did you ever see his fight with Mike Swick for the WC Championship?
Yes, that was what I was talking about.
That fight was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And this is how much of a fucking animal that Chris Lieben is. The fight before that, he won the Gladiator Challenge Championship, and then he fights Mike Swick and puts on a fucking 5-star fight. Crazy. That you gotta go ridiculous. Back and watch it.
Yeah. Crazy. Ridiculous. We're gonna be doing a new studio, and we're gonna have Quentin on. So everybody, follow us. We're gonna be moving over to another studio to have a. Quentin Henry on. We'll do an interview over there.
You're here.
I got to end this broadcast.
God damn it.
I know. It's getting good.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.